Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to our return to the live format after last week's Encore rerun. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and this is the Voice of Indie podcast. This is show number 60, and my co-host is Mr. Stephen Jeeves, whom I just visited down in Alabama for the last week. So how you doing, Stephen?
I am just thrilled and excited to be here. It's always a good time when we're live on the air. I want to appreciate all you people who did tune in last week for the rerun. We were a little bit surprised at how good of numbers we had. And, you know, that was fantastic. The cool thing is we scheduled the rerun because that was our travel day from Michigan to Alabama. We didn't know if we'd be here in time. Turns out we got here 8 minutes before showtime, so we listened to our own show. And I'm telling you, man, those guys are fascinating. Those two authors they talked about, I can't wait to read their books. Man, that's some cool guests last week, I'll tell you. But anyway, thanks for tuning in. Every once in a great while, we'll have to run a rerun when things just don't come together right. And we appreciate your continued support.
Yeah, and for those of you who did tune in and were happened to check out Twitter with the hashtag FreshEngroup, you'll see that we were actually doing live tweets during that too. So we were communicating with a handful of people out there that were still, even though it was a rerun, we're still, you know, putting stuff out there. I do want to mention good news from Verwaine Greenhoe. His wife Lisa is back home now. Hooray! Thank God. We are glad for her return home, and they are possibly in the audience tonight, and I'm guessing they probably are. So welcome home, Lisa. And we are wishing you a speedy recovery, and welcome back to the both of you.
Welcome.
All right.
Hit it, Beam.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah, I knew that was coming up and I took the wrong time to hop over to Twitter to see if Verwaine might have said something on Twitter.
Yeah, and the suspense was killing
me. I got a button to push.
So anyway, we recently had Tammy Trover on the show, and we touted her website, tammytrover.com, place to order those ABCs of Surviving Cancer books with an autograph and maybe a little bit of an inscription or something like that. And then at the end of the show, discovered that the website had gone down. So I'm happy to report that tammytrover.com is back up again. Get over there, learn about Tammy, check out her book, maybe order some copies, do what you got to do. And consider this a cautionary tale. Those of you people who operate websites, it took a lot of investigating for me to figure out what went on here. And most of our website URLs are bought through DirectNIC, which is one of the major companies. And apparently DirectNIC got hacked. People got into one of our two accounts and changed the names on the account and changed the emails and then changed the auto-renew credit card on it. So when the time came, that URL did not renew. When it did not renew, it went down and became vulnerable to somebody else being able to snatch it, which is not a good situation. And we were never informed that this was happening because they changed the email in there. And it turns out that after a little bit of legally wrangling this week, the end result was I had to go up to the next level to the National Registry and get the permissions back. And by the time I was done, we're back to owning TammyTrover.com, but I'm a couple of $100 lighter for the process. Because DirectNIC is not going to take responsibility for letting people get into those accounts. So any of you who use that company for your URLs or use other companies, it wouldn't hurt for you to maybe a couple times a year, note on your calendar, get in there and have a look and make sure that no shenanigans have happened. Because once you lose a URL, that's a serious problem if you invested a lot of money in a website for it.
Especially if somebody comes in and takes it from you, and then they've got your website name. that, well, now back in the early days of the internet, the Wild West days, there were groups that would go out and they would buy up names of celebrities like TomCruise.com or musical acts like MotleyCrue.com or whatever. And when these people wanted to, when they saw that, you know, this is a new way to promote their music or their movies or whatever, went to go set up websites, they had to go and pay these people to buy the rights to that domain name. But this isn't
large
Wild West anymore. Yeah, with tens
those
of thousands.
Those are called squatters.
Yeah, so this isn't the Wild West anymore, but there's still those possibilities. We lost DocShearer.com in a similar way. So, I mean, that's a cautionary tale. Listen, everybody, we are now 3 days away from the release of Hello, Chattanooga. David Carroll's latest book, we had him on the air here a few weeks back, and September 25th is the release date. This is the book that details all of the famous people who passed through Chattanooga over the last 125 years. So this is going to go back to old vaudeville performers all the way through to people that are out there right now. And it's music, it's actors, it's politicians, it's sports idols. It's just, I mean, a who's who of everybody. It's chock full of photographs, color photographs. It's got listings of the facilities and the dates and who played where and when. And it's just a really cool book. So keep that in mind, September 25th, Hello Chattanooga by David Carroll.
Now, this is a fairly expensive book. It's 710 pages of color interior printing, which is the most expensive way that we can do it. And David is, once the word has started spreading around Chattanooga, David is being inundated with requests to come speak before clubs, different events, things like that. And when he does, he takes a trunk full of books and sells them, autographs them, and sometimes inscribes them for people and moves them out. And he started out with literally a semi-truck full of books that we had to ship him, and then had to ship him 200 hardcovers, and then I've had to ship him 200 more hardcovers. And the book's not even out yet. 3 more days before the book's out. So that's going to be a popular book, apparently all over the country, because we are getting steam pre-sales coming in from everywhere. But in Chattanooga and that whole area of the three states, Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee, that Chattanooga is at the corner of, this is going to be a great book. And David's a very popular guy. He's been a part of the Chattanooga media scene for many decades. So congratulations, David. We're glad to see your book is taking off even before it's released. And we look forward to having a lot of fun with that book in the years to come.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Yeah, like and subscribe. All right, we would like to take this opportunity to welcome the newest Fresh Ink Group member, Jenny Wang. She's a Houston area real estate mogul and a newly minted author. I'm currently working on her manuscript, doing the editing and going over it, and this is going to be a cool book. So it falls under the category of chick lit. I guess that would be the genre that's what's coined for that. But if you see her out there on Twitter, Jenny Wang, give her a shout and say, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, we're currently building a website for her too, which we haven't done in a little while. So we're looking forward to spending a lot of time with Jenny. Also, Robert G. Willis Croft's book, Icicle, which is the first in the Oort Chronicles series, has received an endorsement by Doctor Who Online. So we're going to put that in next week's newsletter. We'd like to draw that to everybody's attention, or you can get on over to the Doctor Who Online website, check things out. That's a terrific endorsement and from a very quality source. And you authors out there, keep that stuff in mind. You need to be figuring out all the different places that they might be interested in your book and make them aware of it. Ask for those endorsements. Ask for those reviews. Don't be bashful about sending people to Amazon to throw those 5-star reviews up. That's how you get attention. And the Doctor Who Online has a massive following. This will be good for Dr. Willis Croft's book. And He's already completed the second book in the series. We're substantially into the cover design, and we're getting ready to start on the book design, the interior design of that too. So this will be a good launch for the second book in the series as well. Now, if you want to
stay on top of these podcasts,
go ahead.
Next week's newsletter. Go ahead, hit it.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right. Trailers. You hear these on air nearly always, and these videos are on YouTube, and they're also on our website. Many authors have music-only trailers, which don't work here. We put together our own trailers. Most of the time, we hire professional voiceover artists. We do a lot of really cool stuff with the visuals as well as the audios. We add music and the voiceover and sometimes even special effects and whatnot. And the real cool thing is we can post the video itself on YouTube and get that out there. And then each week, we can pull the audio from it and use that on here as a commercial. Now, if you want a trailer made for your book, Stephen, how do we do that?
Well, right now we're offering a deal. If you go to merch.freshinkgroup.com, there's a tag there where you can click on it and you can order your own trailer for a special offer price of $99 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's animation, special effects, voiceover, everything that we can put into these so that we can play them as radio commercials on air and video commercials on YouTube and other outlets as well. And that's below our cost of making them. So this really is an offer, especially since we have to pay the professional voiceover people. But so this is something we try to do for our authors and for people that we would like to be our authors or those that we just simply want to support. So that's merch.freshinkgroup.com for your $99 trailer deal.
Yeah. Okay. Now, before I get on to this next thing here, that we got some Twitter comments here. Glad to see Erwin Greenhoe is out here. He says, thank you. Thank you. Both of us are here. And thank you for your prayers. And he also said, oh, yes, I had my first website in 1994. You must be on top of your renewals. At my peak, I had 830 websites. And until just recently, I had a complex of 5 servers to do live audio and video streaming. I was doing live event streaming back in 2000. So he's kind of a pioneer in this stuff. And Dr. Helen Burrell is in the audience tonight. She says, here's an overview of Patty's expansive works. This is our guest, Patty Wiseman, coming in. She's a popular speaker for community groups, writers groups, and workshops, inspiring audiences to embrace their challenges, live their best life. Silver's Redemption is her newest creation. So thank you, Dr. Helen, and thank you for being in the audience tonight. Now, a few weeks ago, those of our regular listeners, you may remember we had C.S. Boyack, Craig Boyack, the author here in the studio. And Craig has this plan for his books, the Hat series. The plan is to push his entire series of Hat stories during October. These stories have a Halloween vibe, which fits well within the month. He is doing a volume per week, and 2 of them will have free days. The Hat will be free on October 5th through the 7th, and The Ballad of Mrs. Maloney will be free from October 19th through the 21st. And the whole thing will involve a Tuesday and Thursday blog tour, which with a push of the free volumes by Fussy Librarian. So when these blog tour links come up, we'll get those for you, and I will announce them here. And in the meantime, just keep that in mind, and I'll announce this again probably the next couple of weeks too, leading up to, or at least the next week leading up to October, going into October. We're almost there. Wow.
Yeah, we'll tell Sam to mention it in the newsletter as well, too. And if you don't know how to subscribe to that newsletter by now, you're not paying attention.
Yep.
So this week's guest is author Patty Wiseman. Author Patty Wiseman is a former president of East Texas Writers Association in Longview, Texas. A native of Seattle, Washington, she moved to Bartlesville, Oklahoma, after high school to attend the Wesleyan College. After college, she moved to Northeast Texas, where she met and married her Texas-born husband, Ron. After a 25-year career as an administrative assistant to a financial professional, she retired and is living her dream. Her children are grown and pursuing their own dreams, and she has settled into the writing life with gusto. 8 books are published, with another due to be released next month. She's accumulated multiple awards and enjoys mentoring new writers. An avid history buff with a weakness for a good riddle, her books will keep you riveted as you try to solve the mysteries and are swept away with the romance. Patty Wiseman has a favorite quote: "Find out who you are, then do it on purpose." And that's from Dolly Parton, an apt person to quote.
Yes. Welcome, Patty. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thank you, guys. Glad to be here.
So how are you today?
I'm doing well, very well, and I'm excited to be on the show and talk to the two of you and promote some of my books and reach out to some people and hear from some people. It's just exciting.
Yeah, definitely. So, Patty, what kind of child were you? Were you into reading and writing? Were you the homebody, or you were out there Miss Popular and wishing that you had Instagram way back then? What kind of kid were you?
No, I was the kind of kid that had the flashlight under the sheets reading books. That's the kind of kid I was. I got my love of words and storytelling from my grandmother on my father's side, who was very colorful, and I would hide under the stairwell in her house while she relegated these stories to the adults. She thought I was upstairs asleep, but I wanted to hear her stories. And that's really what inspired me to write and began my love of reading.
So what kind of writing were you doing as a kid?
You know, mostly I did poetry in school. I won a couple of awards there, and I did some short stories, and I always dreamed of writing that novel. You know, I thought, I can do this. But, of course, life got in the way, and I didn't really pick it up until about a year before I retired from my career and decided, you know, I'm going to do this. And it just took off from there. My first book was An Unlikely Arrangement, which was based on my grandmother. But it's fictionalized because she's no longer with me, of course, and I had to make up a lot of stuff. But the basis is there in her stories. And I thought that would be my one-and-done book in that 1920s setting. But it wasn't. I'm about to release the 5th book in the series. I call it the Velvet Shoe. Yeah, the Velvet Shoe Collection. And they all start with an unlikely something, and they're in alphabetical order. And this new one is called An Unlikely Elegance. And I have to brag a little bit, if you'll give me a moment, because the model on the cover of my book, this new one, An Unlikely Elegance, is actually my granddaughter. And
right.
I'm just so proud of her. She's a theater arts major, and she's beautiful. And she agreed to do this for me, and it's such a nice touch on the book.
Yeah, terrific. You know, being an author, well, you said you figured the first book you'd be one and done. If you're a true writer, there's no one and done. You're always going to be writing, you know, even if you don't publish
it.
J.D. Salinger, he kind of faded from the public eye and became a hermit during the last couple of decades of his life, but after he died, they found, you know, I think it was like 7 completed manuscripts of novels that he had written, you know, that nobody ever had the chance to read, and now they're going to be published. And I think they, some of them already have been. But
wow.
Stephen King, I remember Stephen King about 20 years ago saying he was looking at probably retiring. He, you know, written as much as he wanted to write. And then here we are 20 years later, and he's still writing. You're a writer. There's no one and done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
and,
education.
Yeah.
What kind of go ahead.
Education, I went to college, Wesleyan College in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And then when I started my career, I got my license for buying and selling stocks and annuities and that kind of thing. So I've had, and none of that had anything to do with my writing career. But it was good background and, you know, gave me a good career. But my heart was always with writing. And I often ask myself, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I jump in, you know, when I was young and write? But I think, and if you read my books, especially my contemporary ones, you'll find that I've put so much of my own experience in my books. And I think that's why I didn't start when I was younger to be a full-time writer, is because I needed to have those life experiences in
life
order
research.
To give me... Yeah, exactly. And now I can't write them fast enough, and I have manuscripts on my computer that I'm beginning and can't seem to get time to finish, and it's just a wonderful thing to have these stories in your head, and you just want to get them down on paper. So I think the question was about my education.
Yeah.
But I got off track a little bit.
Oh, no, that's fine. But you learned a lot of things. In fact, when you were writing, you probably noticed more things that you had learned in your career that you hadn't really thought about. I you know, that was true for me when I write about things that I've actually done.
Exactly. Yes. I've had so many experiences that I've, like I said, I put into my books and I build them into the story, and it makes my children, you know, I think of it kind of as a legacy that my kids, when I'm long gone, they will remember the stories I told them of my life experiences. And as they read my books, they can say, oh yeah, I remember when Mom told me that story.
Yeah.
And that with my grandchildren and stuff. So I always try to put something of a personal nature into the stories. You won't know it, you know, you won't personally know it, but my kids and my grandkids will.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about, you know, having your books out there is your work is going to outlive, our work is going to outlive us. It's
right.
You know, it's there. It's, so when we're gone, it's still there.
Now, before we roll our first commercial here, we want to remind listeners, call in, 516-453-9902. Give a comment to Patty or ask a question or just criticize your hosts, whatever turns you on. But we got a commercial now for Mark Marlowe's book.
Yeah.
North Korea will be the biggest challenge to your presidency, warned the outgoing commander-in-chief. But to imprisoned journalist John Jason, surviving each day in the prison camp proves the greatest challenge of his life. Protecting beautiful young prisoner Jisoo has also grown increasingly difficult for this slight man, otherwise powerless, but for his prowess at deceiving their captors. Navy SEAL Andrew Gunner Jackson is tasked by the president himself with gathering intel from the Hermit Kingdom. It's a dangerous gamble, where capture means summary execution, if he's lucky, or death the slow way in a North Korean prison re-education camp. Information is the least of his concerns, though, as the president agrees, he can leverage this mission to satisfy a few goals of his own. How far will each man go to fend off the cruel machinations of a ruthless dictator? And will that be enough for either to survive? Operation Counterpunch is ready to read now. Proudly published in hardcover, paperback, and all ebook formats by Fresh Ink Group. By Mark Marlowe. Operation Counterpunch.
Yeah, and as usual, that video is over on the YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, and hit the like button, hit the subscribe button while you're over there.
And stuff $20 bills in an envelope and mail them directly to us. That's what you like.
Yeah.
Patty,
exactly.
you have a cool hobby for a person your age. Why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, are you talking about bowling?
Bowling.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm 72 and I've been bowling for over 35 years and I still do it and I still love it and I still carry about a 150 average.
Oh,
and
that's a good average.
Yeah, I had hip surgery back in December and it upset me because I knew that it would probably be weeks and weeks before I could get back to my hobby, bowling, you know. But I asked after my 6 weeks checkup, I said, can I start bowling again? And they told me, well, as long as you don't land on the hip that, you know, on the leg that we operated on. And I said, I don't. So at 6 weeks, I was bowling again. And I've been at it ever since, and I really think it strengthens you. And of course, the camaraderie with I bowl on the ladies' league is so much fun, and it's an event that when I have a new book out, it's an automatic book event because I bring the books to the bowling alley and they all buy them.
Yeah,
pay attention, listeners.
Yeah. Now, I used to bowl. I used to love bowling. I bowled for years and years and years. My whole family did. My parents, they bowled. My brothers and sisters, my brother, my older brother, he's had, you know, numerous 300 games. I never came close to anything like that. I think my highest was a 285. But the whole, like you said, the camaraderie of league night, I mean, I used to love that. It was so much fun because even the rival teams were your friends. Everybody just – so that's the perfect place to introduce a book.
Oh, it is.
Definitely.
I set up a table, you know, in the middle of the bowling alley, and I go to town. I have to run back and forth to the lane and to the book table because I'm signing books, and then it's my turn to bowl, so I have to go bowl. But it's a lot of fun, and they all press me on, when's the next one coming out? When's the next one coming out? And they don't realize that, you know, it takes me over a year to write a book and get it polished and, you know, all of that. So they think they read it in a night or two nights or a week, and then they automatically, well, I want the next one. When's the next one coming out? Well, you're going to have to wait a year because I'm still writing it. But
yeah.
The camaraderie is wonderful.
Now,
go ahead.
I was going to say we've got a phone call, so we can take that since you finished saying what you were saying, Stephen.
I was going to say that's, you know, new writers need to learn to leave shame and decorum at the door and don't be bashful about talking about that kind of stuff. If you can get them to make an announcement at the bowling alley, listen up, over on lane 9, we've got an author in the house. You know, it never hurts to try, right? You know, get out there and do
that stuff.
I do it all the time. When we get new authors, a lot of times they think that first book is going to sell like gangbusters, but you're a nobody. People don't know who you are. And we try to stress to them, it's you'll sell more copies of your first book when your fourth book comes out than you will when the first book came out. You have to build. And when those people say, when's the next book? You say, well, I've got others, right?
Yep, exactly. Go check them out. All right, let's take this phone call. Hello, caller. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Tammy Thompson. I'm calling from Texarkana, Arkansas.
Well, hello.
Hi, Tammy.
Welcome to the show.
Have you got a question?
Question or comment for Patty?
I do have a question. So on your newest your newest book that's fixing to come out. So how, if you can tell a little bit without giving away too much, does the story continue there?
Ooh.
How does the story continue?
Yeah, I mean, like, where
does it go?
I love the book, I love all of the series that you've got, and so you've got a fifth one. Is it told from a specific point of view or a person, same person, or just curious?
Well, the first four books are about the arranged marriage of my grandparents. But in those first four books, I have secondary characters that really come to life. And so the fifth book is about Fanny, the former mob girl, who is given a choice when her speakeasy is raided by the police to either go legit or go to jail. So she becomes a savvy businesswoman, and she opens another restaurant called the Crystal Daffodil, and she becomes the top entertainment, if you will, in the city, and has amazing success. But her mob life doesn't just leave her alone either. So there's romance, there's mystery, there's kidnapping, there's a murder. I mean, we've got it all in this book, but the central figure is Fanny. And they call her, and I call her in this book, I call her Miss Z, because her last name is Zappelli. So she changes from Fanny to Miss Z.
Interesting.
Gotcha.
So, caller, were you asking if there's going to be a book six?
Well,
you know? every time I say this is the last one, a new idea pops up. So I don't know.
Yeah. Now this series, you got the five books in it. The first four are set in the 1920s. Is that right?
Yes.
Boy, that sounds like a fascinating time for me. And then the fifth book jumps ahead?
Yeah, it jumps ahead to about 1935. And this is after the evolution of Fanny and how she became a savvy businesswoman and the toast of the town, pretty much.
Tammy, do you have a favorite in those?
Well, I mean, I liked, as far as, holy cow, a favorite of Patty's?
Or a favorite in that series.
I think I liked the first one because I think the unlikely arrangement, because it's where the foundation started, you get the foundation of everything she writes after that. And which anybody that's not read Patty's stuff, holy cow, it's just like, you know what, anytime you want to be taken to another place and time, this is what you need. And with this day and time, we all need to be somewhere else.
So this,
you're sweet,
this start,
Tammy.
Yeah, this started out based on your grandmother, who was a flapper in Detroit. Can you tell us a little bit more about your grandmother's life and how that interested you and inspired your book?
Well, she was, this is based in Detroit, Michigan, and that's where she grew up. And she was a wild child. She wanted to go out with her friends and do the Charleston and do all this stuff. And her parents were very strict, and they didn't like the path she was going down, so they arranged a marriage for her. And that part is true. My father is actually the product of that marriage. And she, of course, rebelled against it at first, but then the love story happens in the book. Now, I didn't follow the path that my grandparents went down per se. I think I wanted to portray their relationship differently than it really was, because my father was the only child out of that union, and my grandfather was killed by a rival mob gang, the Purple Gang, because of his last name. And it was mistaken, though, because he wasn't of that gang, and it was a mistake. But, you know, my dad, he never knew his father because he was only 10 months old when he was killed. And so this story, this unlikely arrangement and the rest of them are a tribute to him and the fact that he lost his life before he could even really live it. And that's where it started from. That's the base of it. And that's why I tell people, I put a little bit of myself into these books because these are the stories that I heard as a child.
Hold on a second. Tammy, do you have anything else that you want to add? Because we're going to move on. We got another caller lined up.
No, I just wanted to say, hey, Patty, I really love what you do, and keep on doing what you're doing. I love you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, dear. Love you, too.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you for calling. We appreciate that. Okay, so you want to take the next caller, or do you want to continue?
Yeah.
Okay. Spinning. Okay, there we go. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You are on the air. What is your name, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Nancy Hudgens, and I'm calling from Gilmer, Texas.
Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nancy.
Thank you. Hi. Hey, Patty, how are you?
Good.
I have read all of your books, of course, and I love them. And one thing that I've noticed is that obviously you have the Velvet Shoe Collection, which is essentially historical, but then you've also branched out and done you've done a paranormal, you've got some contemporary, and there's kind of like almost like an underlying message in all of your books. And I have to say that the one of all of them, and I, you know, everybody's got their favorites, and mine has to be Silver's Redemption. And for that, because, well, you know, I'm kind of like at a certain maturity level in my life, and it's so gratifying to see a female character of a mature age who is portrayed as not only someone with value within their society as it was, or, you know, that there's still, you know, you can still find love even if you're over, you know, over 50. So kudos to you, girl. I like that.
Hey.
Well, thank you. Well, I like to portray strong women, and, you know, I was asked to write a story about an older woman, and that's where Silver's Redemption came into being. And she's 56 and gets gut punched pretty much in her career and is booted out by a younger woman. And this story is about her rebuilding her self-worth and gaining back her confidence and realizing that women of a certain age have so much value left. And the story, again, I sort of had that experience in my career. And so that was another personal touch for me. So Silver's Redemption is one of my favorites out of the ones I've written.
Yeah, it's one of mine too. You know, I like somewhere but I like Silver's Redemption probably the best.
Oh, you're sweet.
Yeah.
You helped me critique that.
I know.
Right.
I think it's great.
And it's a great audience to target, too, older women. That's probably one of the biggest reading demographics there is. And they
it
tend
is.
To be able to afford books, you know,
yeah.
in their later years as well, too. So kudos for focusing on a big category of readers with the kind of story that they like to hear. Silver's Redemption by Patty Wiseman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do a lot of garage selling. That's just one of the things I do. This is where I find a lot of my books. And I see that with the older women that are putting these garage sales on, they have boxes of books of all different kinds. And I just go through them and pick out the ones I want. They're big readers. So, yeah, that's a huge demographic.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for calling in, Nancy. We appreciate
that.
Really appreciated you joining our show today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy.
Good talking to you, Patty.
Yeah. Now, over on Twitter, we have a tweet from Verwayne Greenhoe. He says, my wife says that if I tried to do the Charleston, I would break a hip on one side and a femur on the other. She's getting feisty again, laugh out loud. Lisa says she is interested in that story. Oh, Patty Wiseman, sounds like you've picked up a fan.
Yay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what this show is all about. Yeah.
Okay,
so
do we have any more callers right now, Beam?
No, we don't.
Okay, then let's get to our commercial icicle because we're getting behind on our commercials here.
All right.
Now, introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Willis-Croft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they're coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Those danged old aliens.
I'm telling you.
All right.
All right, check out that video on YouTube and our websites, and next week we'll have the endorsement from Doctor Who Online in the newsletter.
Yeah. So
Patty, what is your writing process? I mean, do you get up every day and start in the morning, or just do it whenever you have time, or is it a real formal thing for you? How do you write?
Well, I'm a morning person, so I'm up early and I go through emails and social media, and you know, I try not to take more than an hour to do that, and then I'm writing. And I may write till lunchtime, or I may write 30 minutes, but I'm going to get some writing done in the morning. I'm pretty much done after lunch because then I get sleepy. Maybe that's old age. I don't know.
So do you set like a word count, how many words a day you'll write, or you just write until you don't want to write anymore?
No, I don't set a word count. I go by inspiration. I don't, because I have to be inspired, and when that inspiration runs short, to me, I don't feel like I would do it any justice if I forced it. So I try to write until the inspiration just kind of fizzles, and then I'll get up the next morning and it's back and I'm going again.
Yeah, years ago, somebody had talked me into trying that routine where you're going to set a word count and you're going to write that many words. And I'd reached that word count, and what I found was that most of it was uninspired, and it was flat, and it was like 80% of it I'd have to throw out.
Right. So it's kind of a waste of time.
Yeah. All right, we have another caller. You guys want to jump into another one?
Woohoo!
Yay!
All right. Hello, caller. You are on the air. Welcome to the show. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Ruth, and I am calling from Longview, Texas.
Hi, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Ruth.
Hey, how are you, Patty?
I'm good.
Good. I'm enjoying this broadcast. One of my questions, though, is how do your characters evolve? You know, how do you make them come to life like you do?
Good question.
Oh, wow. Well, inspiration, a lot of it, description-wise and character-wise, I base on the people that I know, and mostly in my family, and I have a very colorful family, that I pick up their characteristics, their physical attributes, their, you know, idiosyncrasies, is that the word? You know, just little things like that that make them unique in themselves, and I try to weave that into the character. And
okay.
Hopefully it inspires a character that people want to read about and enjoy.
Okay. So can I ask another question?
Ask away.
Okay. Now, Patty, in your book with Miss Fanny Z, at the end of the book, the person that she chooses to live the rest of her life with, how did you choose him rather than the other person? I don't want to give away the ending.
No, I don't want you to give away the ending because it is a surprise ending, yes.
It is absolutely a surprise ending.
Well, if you'll go back and read the opening page, the first few paragraphs, that is where I had in mind, you know, that she would either be with him or not be with him. And
okay.
he's quite a colorful character too, but there's two or three other men that are interested in her. She's quite a catch, you know. And so she has choices to make. And so I know that I got some flack from some of my critique group that wanted me to pair her up with one of the others. But, you know, sometimes the characters just take over and you have no choice. So
okay.
that's how it came to be.
So basically you're saying your character tells you what to do.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I've tried to force, you know, things before. It doesn't work.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Okay.
Pushiest people you'll ever know is the characters in your books.
Yeah, right.
What are you going to do? Write me out?
Another question is, do your characters ever come to you in the middle of the night or in a dream or that sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh.
I keep a pad and pen by my bedside table because I'll sometimes just sit bolt upright in bed and say, oh, there it is, you know. And,
wow.
Yeah, and they'll tell me what. And then I can't wait to get to the computer the next morning and get it on paper. But yeah,
but I
think mostly it's because my characters are based on people that I've known all my life and family that I've known all my life and people that I've not known but are ancestors, you know, and I've read about them or I've heard about them and their characteristics come through to me. And so I want to get that written into their character, into the book. So, yeah, they come to me in the middle of the night.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I just can't imagine. Well, Patty, thank you for answering my questions, and I look forward to the next book you're going to write.
Thank you, Ruth. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ruth.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Ruth.
Okay, bye-bye.
Patty, that's the answer we do not want to hear from a true crime writer. Yeah, my characters come to me in the middle of the night. It can get ugly. we're going to roll another commercial here and then ask you about Somewhere Between when we come back from it. This commercial is Sassy Discovers the AME Church, and we threw this back into rotation quickly because in honor of author B.A. Johnson, who is impressing us with her prowess at getting her book into library systems out there. She's really worked in the library circuit, getting people to order multiple copies of that book, put it on the shelves. And that's a terrific way not only to get her story out there, but to get herself as an author recognized for future sales as well. So this is Sassy Discovers the AME Church.
Hi, I'm Mary Margaret Stanton. My grandmother, Big Mama, calls me Sassy. I've been a member of the African Methodist Episcopal Church all my life. I never knew why everyone was so proud to be AME. Then I meet Gerald in Children's Church. He thinks he knows everything about being AME. I have to learn a lot more just to show him. B.A. Johnson has written a book about me, my brother, and my friends with lots of colorful drawings. We also explore bullying, friendship, inclusion, death, grief, forgiveness, and more. Sassy discovers that AME Church is published by Fresh Ink Group in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Available worldwide. Come on, join me and discover why I can say I'm proud to be AME.
Shout out to the little girl who did that voiceover. That was the daughter of one of the author's friends, and she did it as a volunteer, and we were very impressed with her.
And that video is over on YouTube, so get over there and check it out.
And subscribe and like.
Subscribe
so
and like.
So, Patty, Somewhere Between, what kind of story is that, and where does it take place?
Well, it takes place in South Texas in the 1800s, and after I had finished four books of my series and a contemporary, I wanted to do something different because I'm always liking to stretch my writing muscles, so to speak. And as a child growing up, I had what I can only describe as a ghost experience. And so that kind of stuck with me, and I decided I was going to write a story about it. It's there again, it's something from a personal nature in this book. But she's a governess, and she moves to this mansion with this family and encounters a ghost on the third floor. And she's the only one that can see him, and he can't leave the library because that's where he was murdered decades ago. And so she helps him solve the murder. And there is a thread of romance between the ghost and another woman that has also passed on. And so Phoebe is her name. She tries to reunite the two through however she can. And so it's a novella. It's a fast read. And that was another thing. I've always tried to write full-length novels, but I also have heard that novellas are really big sellers. So I thought, well, I'm going to make this one a novella. And a novella, you know, it has to be 40,000 words or less. So I had written the story, and it was over 40,000 words, and I had to cut. And, oh, my gosh, you know how difficult that is. So I had – and still to make it readable and enjoyable and all of that, it was quite a feat. So – it's the only novella I've written. I don't know if I'll attempt that again because I think I'm more long-winded than a novella.
Yeah, cutting, especially if you like what it is that you're cutting, that's the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
That self-editing, yeah. And I've done that. But you know, if you like it that much and it's some cool stuff, you can tuck it away, and maybe it shows up somewhere else eventually.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of folders like that, things I've cut.
Now, writing a ghost story, mm-hmm. which is a big change of pace from what you're used to writing, Was that learn as you go, or was it something that kind of was easy, or, you know, what sort of research would you do for a ghost story?
I didn't really do a lot of research on ghosts, but I took some things from the experience I had as a teenager. And I, you know, the only thing I could explain this situation that I found myself in was that it was a ghost. And so I don't think that I did a lot of research on that one. I just kind of, I don't outline big time either. I'm not a pantser. I do have a loose outline of where I want it to start and where I want it to go and what's going to be in the middle. But, or sometimes I name my chapters as an outline to get to where I want to go. But it was a lot of fun to write this book, and it's been a really good seller. And I've been really excited about that. But it was, like I said, it was flexing my writing muscles to write a novella and to write a ghost story. So I've accomplished that, and on to the next thing.
Yeah. Well,
you know, the cool thing is you succeeded in this, and that's, you know, that's the mark of a true author. The true writers, they can write anything. A cookbook, science fiction.
Yeah.
And
I know
a lot of authors
stay in one genre all the time, and
yeah.
that's just not me. I think I would run out of material or something. I think it must be a very inspired person that can keep. And I'm flighty. I don't know,
yeah.
But I want to try new things. So
yeah. Speaking of new things, you have a children's book as well.
I do.
And what's that one called? And what's the inspiration for it?
It's called Rescue at Wiseman's Pond. And we do have a pond, and that's what we named it out here in the Texas country. The inspiration for that came in 2016 when we had so much rain, it wasn't even funny. And it flooded our pond. And we have a cream lab. His name is Cutter, and he was instrumental in saving two baby fox that were drowning in our pond. The mother fox had built a den not too far from the pond, but in normal circumstances, the water would have never risen that high. And but in this instance, it did. And my husband has a shop quite a ways from the pond, and he heard Cutter barking, and he was relentless. He was just barking over and over and over and over again until my husband went down to see what he was barking at, and that's when he found the two baby fox struggling to get their heads above the water. And so we rescued them. They looked like they were dead. I mean, they weren't breathing, and they looked like little rats. I told Ron, these aren't fox, they're rats. And he said, no, they're fox. And so we put a towel and a heating pad down and put them on there, and I kept rubbing them up and down until finally they both started to breathe, and we saved them. And my husband cleaned the mud out of their ears and their nose and their mouth and everything, and they became pretty rambunctious little fox. But I had to call the nature reserves to find out what to do with them. We live out in the middle of the woods, and they said, you have to release them, and we can't take them because you found them in nature, and the mother will come back. And I learned so much from this process that the mother hunts at night, and that she builds two dens and she sleeps in one and the babies sleep in the other. And so she was gone hunting when all this flooding started, so they didn't have their mama. And so the nature reservist told me, put up a camera, you know, one of those camping or hunting cameras, you know, on a tree. Build this den, and so we did, a box den, and put the babies back in it, and the mother will come back and get them. And sure enough, she did. And so my husband kept saying, you'll have to write a story about that, a book about that. And yeah, well, I don't write children's books, you know, I kept telling him. And then one day I just sat down and it came to me. And it's rhyming. It all of it is in rhyme. And it turned out, I sat down and wrote it in one afternoon. And just, you know, tweaked it here and there and published it, and it's been a big success. But and Cutter actually has his own Facebook page, you know. So,
I keep
waiting for Cutter to do something else so that I can write another children's book. Because I don't seem to be inspired to ride another one at the moment, but maybe.
Need to teach him to ride a bike or something.
Yeah.
Well, Patty, you just taught me something, because on the yards on either side of me here, they have big built-up areas where they've got thick shrubbery and whatnot. And if I sit out here on the deck at night, I see a red fox going from one set of those to the other. And at first I thought, well, she's got to have a den in one of these, but why is she going back and forth between them? And now it sounds like maybe she's in one and her babies are in the other.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I did a lot of research. I did a lot of research on that. And in the book, I don't use the reservists as the people that I called. I actually use the fire station. I thought it would be more interesting for kids, and because they're first responders, it would, you know, be more interesting for them and colorful. So the fireman in the book is who tells me what to do. And then at the end of the book, they get a medal, Cutter and my husband, who I made him as a little boy. He's not a grown man in the book. He's a little boy, but I named him Ronnie, because my husband's name is Ron. And we also have a bird in it called Mrs. Barn Swallow. And I don't know if you have these where you live, but in Texas we have barn swallows. And I didn't know it, but it's illegal to move a barn swallow's nest. Once it builds its nest, you have to leave it there. And one built its nest over my car in the carport. And I couldn't move it. So I got all the droppings and nesting stuff down on the top of my car. But I put her in the book, and I put a turtle that hung around our pond, Fred the Turtle, in the book as well. So there's a lot of animals, and then the fireman and Cutter and my husband.
Now, we have a fresh ink. Facebook page called Fresh Ink Group Kids. So I've just made a note here. We need to put your book on that page, because we have eight or nine children's books from Fresh Ink Group now. Plus, we have members and friends like Patty Wiseman that we always try to promote, even if we don't publish them. So look for that to be on the Fresh Ink Group Kids page on Facebook. And if you're not hip to that page yet and you're interested in kids' books or have kids who are interested in reading, get on over to that page too. Follow it. See what's going on.
Great.
So, Patty, a lot of our listeners are they're also authors, and they're into the inner workings of the publishing. How do you publish your books? What's the process?
Well, when I first, the first book, An Unlikely Arrangement, I had just joined a writer's group in Longview, Texas, and within that group was gentleman that self-published his books, and I asked him if he could help me with the process. And he said, I'll do you one better. I'll do it for you. And he became a publisher, and he published the first four books in the series, the Unlikely series. And he helped me immensely learn, you know, about covers, about acknowledgments, about bios, about dedications, and all of that kind of stuff. But then he went out of business. Family situation took him out of the publishing business. And I was very fortunate to find another local person in Linden, Texas, who took over the books that I wrote. And she's still publishing those for me. And so I call myself an indie author, but, you know, all she does is the technical stuff. She gets it formatted and gets the covers right and, you know, all of that. And then she takes her hands off and I have all my rights. So that's how I do it right now.
That's still
good. That's working well for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the way Fresh
Ink
Group
fortunate.
Works as well.
Yeah.
Everybody
gets
their rights. Everybody owns everything. Everybody has total control. So you call yourself an indie author? You are, and you're working with an indie publisher.
Because if you're not an indie author, that means you don't have control over those things. You don't have those final says. You're tied to a contract with a publishing company that they get the final say. Being an indie author pays dividends.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me one time why I didn't go with a big publishing company. You know, why didn't I query, you know, those people? And, you know, I'm 72 years old. I don't have time to wait 2 or 3 years before they reject me, right?
Right. And it does take years for those rejections.
It does. It does.
Right. And that whole market has changed, too.
It has. And, you know, I want control. I want to say what's on my covers. I want the title to be what I want it to be. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want that scene removed because you don't like it. I believe that it should be in the hands of the artist, the author, the musician, whoever that is creating the product. They should always have the final say on it.
Exactly.
Their vision.
And that's where Fresh Ink Group came from. My first couple of books were with mainstream publishers, and I had no control, no say. And since I was a newbie author, they didn't print very many copies either. So people I knew around the country would look for the books and couldn't find them. It's like, gee, is this hitting it big? Have I done something here? So Fresh Ink Group was born from several friends and I, including Beam Weeks, wanting to take total control of our books. So sounds like you're doing it right, Patty. Now, you're also, you've played a very important role in the Texas Writers Group. What is that?
You mean the East Texas Writers Association?
Right. Yeah. What were the roles that you played?
I was, when I first joined that group about 11 years ago, I was their secretary, and then I was so busy that I was still working full time, and I didn't have time to do everything that I needed to do. And the president role came up after I retired, and I became president for about 3 years until health issues took me out of the game, and I dropped down to vice president, of which I am right now. But what I really love is bringing this information to new writers. We have young people, we have older people, retired people that want to write, and, you know, all in between. And the biggest joy I have is giving the information freely to them, because there are those people that want to keep that close to their vest and not, they think of writers as other writers as competition. And I don't think of that at all that way, because it's apples and oranges. I don't write what you write and you don't write what I write. You know, it's, we should all be helping each other. And that's what I like to do, and that's the role that I like to play in the Writers Association.
Yeah, we also look at other indie publishers, not as competition, but as out there, people out there that we can help support, and they support us, and there's room for everybody. There's plenty of room
and
for
there
everybody
is.
Out there.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
And if some people find that they're working with somebody other than us is what works best for them, that doesn't hurt our feelings. That's the way it's just going to be. So you also belong to a writer's critique group. Is that right?
I do. I love my critique group. We started, oh my goodness, how many years ago? 5-6 years ago. And we've learned to work so well together. Now, I have been in some critique groups that were brutal. You may have had that same experience. But I don't believe that you should, cut somebody off at the knees with their writing. I believe in maintaining your own voice, and it's up to the critique people, you know, in this group to help you maintain your voice. It may not be the way you would write it, but if they want to say it this way, you know, then help them polish that so that it comes out as their voice. And my critique group absolutely does that. And we would meet at restaurants before the pandemic hit and have a nice lunch and then pull out our pages that we'd printed off and, explain why we felt this didn't work or the punctuation wasn't right or the grammar wasn't right or whatever. And then we'd all discuss it. And since the pandemic, we've been doing it on Zoom. And that's a lot of fun. I don't know that we'll go back to the restaurants, you know, because Zoom is a lot of fun. But, you know, a good critique group is so important, but it's also very important to critique the correct way and not cut somebody down. I had one person one time say, you need to throw this in the trash and start over.
Oh,
well,
geez.
You know what?
Man.
You just can't say that
no.
to somebody, you know. So that was many years ago, and it wasn't directed toward me. It was directed toward my friend, and I just couldn't allow it. And I took that friend, and I helped her get her book published. And it took a lot of work, but, you know, it got done. But, you know, we don't have enough kindness in this world, and that's
no.
That was what I was hoping to show was critique with kindness, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I had gotten out of a club, I'm not going to name it, but I was there for 6 years. And towards the end, it became very cultish and backbiting
toxic.
And just toxic. And it was because they're upset with the person, they attack the work. And I wanted nothing more to do with that and was going with it. And I see more and more people that were there when I was there have all left in droves. And unfortunately, they get suckers to come to join up. You know, they have to learn the lesson the hard way. You know, when you fall out with the dear leader, for lack of a better word, when you fall out with dear leader, your persona non grata with a grudge. It's just, I mean, it was, you know, like Stephen just said, toxic. And there was no kindness there. It was just brutality. And, you know, that's eventually going to catch up with these people. And it's eventually going to, slap them in the face.
I've seen them in this old critique group that I don't, you know, like you said, I don't go there anymore, but I've seen them leave in tears, you know, and how devastating is that when you thought you had something from your heart and they've just brutally beat it into the ground. I don't understand how a person can do that, and I certainly wouldn't do that. But that being said, I'm not saying that our critique group doesn't disagree sometimes, but we do it with kindness and understanding.
Well, that's, yeah.
And
that's, That's the whole idea behind a group is you're going to have disagreements, but you're not brutal about it. You're not mean and, you know, vicious about it.
Yeah.
You're not toxic about it.
Right.
And you don't make it a personal issue because you're mad at this person, so you're going to tear their work apart.
Yeah, I can't go there.
I belong to one of these groups. We meet monthly at the library here in town. And it's, you know, a dozen writers or whatever. And we had a new guy come in, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, something like that. And his agenda was to show everybody how much he knows. And it seems like every group's always got one that has to do that. And he's in there bragging that he's had this thing published or he's, you know, he has this experience and he has a degree in English. Well, I have a degree in English, you know. But he wanted to be the big shot who knew more than everybody else. So people would read things, and we read our stuff out loud. They have everybody has copies in front of them that they can follow along, but we listen to the author actually read the work. And I read a piece that I was working on, and he jumped all over it. And he started, well, you didn't need to do this, and that, you know, why'd you do that, and all that kind of stuff. And I patiently explained to him how he had missed the entire point of the story and how the part he was criticizing was something that I had set up throughout from sentence one. And I showed him these places. And other people, they were saying, and that was my favorite part. You know, I don't know why you criticize that. That's what made the story cool. So one of the things that I've noticed in critique groups, it also helps orient the critiquers over time, too, because this guy has learned to kind of sit back, pay more attention, and look for stuff in stories that he's never really noticed was there before. And now I'm seeing his writing improving as a result of that. So it's kind of funny how the dynamics of these groups work. But if you can't be nice, you shouldn't be there.
Well, you know, that reminds me of talking about the previous group that we were in, Stephen, where the cult. And
the cult.
There was that one person that was the smartest person in the room. And you know what I see? I see through that. Those people are inside, they are insecure. So they have to project this image that, look, I'm superior to you guys. But you're not.
Uh-huh.
You're inferior because of your own insecurities.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Now, Patty, let's move on before we run out of time. I understand you have a podcast. Tell us a little bit about that.
I do. Well, I, you know, started it because I like to write and tell stories. And, again, a lot of these stories are from my childhood and things that actually happened to me. And there's one about my father also that I'm particularly fond of. He was 17 when he went into the Navy and was sent to Pearl Harbor and was there when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And so just before that, he'd found out that his father, who he was raised with all his life, wasn't his father, and that they'd changed his name without benefit of adoption. So imagine being 17, sitting on the USS Raleigh, and being bombed by the Japanese. I mean, he had major PTSD all of his life. And we never knew what it was because back in that day, they didn't know what PTSD was. But so it colored my childhood a lot with his. But I was very close to my dad, and I used to call him Blackbeard because he was very intimidating. He had black curly hair, and when we'd go camping or whatever, he'd let his beard grow out. And so I think one of the stories there, if I was Blackbeard drank cocoa, you know, but we'd sit around the campfire and I'd drink cocoa and he'd drink with me and we'd talk. And so I do have several of those stories there. And then I also recently, now I have to back up and say that I was off my podcast for a year because of health issues, but I'm back. And hopefully we'll be posting a lot more. But I actually posted the first chapter of An Unlikely Elegance on my podcast. I'm reading it, so it's not perfect, but it's you can get the first chapter if you want to listen to that first chapter. It's not published yet, but it should be out in a couple of weeks. I'm praying. It's been pushed back, and I want it out, but, you know, it's in the publisher's hands right now. But
okay.
I did feel like I could post that first chapter on the podcast, but mostly I'm going to be focusing on short stories.
Okay. Now, we have a caller. We'll take that. But before we take the call, where can people find your podcast?
It's on anchor.fm/Patty with a Y-Wiseman. It's on Spotify and all that too. So I do have a Facebook page dedicated to that podcast, and it's just Patty Wiseman Podcast. If you'll search for that, then you can see I post my new episodes on the Facebook page as well.
All right.
And Patty, if you'll send the info to our marketing kid, Sam@FreshInkGroup.com, he can put that in the newsletter too. So listeners, watch for that information and upcoming newsletters so you can check out Patty's podcast.
So let's take this caller.
Hello, Patty.
Hi. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Lawrence. I'm in East Texas.
Hi, Lawrence.
Hey, Lawrence.
I wanted to tell Patty I was glad she was back.
Well, thank you. Lawrence is the current president of the East Texas Writers Association.
Shout out.
Hi. Shout out.
Yeah, I conducted a coup.
Conducted a coup.
I was a VP and rebelled. I've conducted a coup on her.
All right.
Yeah. We switched.
And any of you writers in East Texas, pay attention because it sounds like a great group.
Yeah. It is a great group. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're back, Patty. And now that I've heard about your podcast on your first chapter, I'm going to go chase it down so I'd be ready for the book.
Oh, thanks, Lawrence. I appreciate that. Good to hear from you.
You too.
Thanks for calling, Lawrence.
Come in and talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Before that wrap the caller's beam?
What's that?
Does that wrap up all our callers?
Yeah, he's the last caller there. We got about 8 minutes. So if there's another caller out there that wants to slip in with a quick question, you got 8 minutes to do so. Try not to do it too close to that 2-minute mark, though, because that's when we got to wrap things up before we get kicked out of here.
Advice to authors, Patty?
Advice to authors? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking.
You know, just persevere. Find a good writers group, and if it doesn't seem to be a fit, go to the next town and find another one, because you know there's some good ones out there. I wouldn't be where I am now if it hadn't been for the writers group in Longview, Texas, and we actually have a Christian writers group in Longview, Texas as well, and I try to go back and forth to those. But find a good writers association or group and just roll up your sleeves and learn, because you can't, even if you have an English degree, you still aren't going to know everything there is to know about the writing process and the publishing process and the marketing process. And that's where you're going to learn, is from the writers groups. And don't go it alone as far as editing and critiquing. Find a good critique group. Find beta readers and get their feedback. Those are some important elements in getting your book polished and ready to go.
Perfect advice.
Yeah. Now, earlier you had mentioned about being, you know, from childhood being quite the reader. And do you have any favorite writers?
Well, in my current years, I like Diana Gabaldon, the Outlander series. I just love her writing, and she's just like, she doesn't stick to the script a lot. You know, she does her own thing. And, you know, there's supposed to be these rules in writing. She doesn't
rules.
Follow
we don't
that.
Need no stinking rules.
Yeah, right. And so I really enjoy her series. She even got a television series out of her books. And, yeah, she's, I don't have a lot of time for reading now, but I pick up her books every time I can.
Okay. Now, before we run out of time, where can people find you? Where can they contact you on social media, blog, website, Facebook, Instagram?
You can find my Facebook page, just facebook.com/Patty Wiseman Author. And, of course, I told you about the podcast, Patty Wiseman Podcast. That's on Facebook. And Instagram, at Patty W G. That's Patty with a Y. And Twitter is the same thing, at Patty W G. And then my podcast on Anchor, which is anchor.fm/Patty-Wiseman. And I'm on all kinds of social media, but I couldn't, you know, tell you all of them right now. But anytime you want to Google it or search it, like in LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn too. Just type in the name and you'll find me. Oh, and my website, pattywiseman.com. I don't think I mentioned that. But
yeah, that's the big one, pattywiseman.com.
Yeah.
Got all kinds of cool stuff on it. Patty, thanks for being on the show. We really enjoyed having you this week. And we want to thank everybody who participated, the callers, the tweeters, the people who stuffed bills in envelopes and mailed them to us. And we want to thank Sam for helping us get that newsletter out each week. You know, I mention him every now and then. And those of you who are going to be a guest on a show are going to get pestered by him. Don't be surprised.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Yeah.
I appreciate
well,
it.
Definitely. We this was a lot of fun, Patty. Now
it is.
I'm currently working with a musician who is working on 3 books, and he's in the early stages, the early processes of it. One of them is a guitar teaching book. He's a brilliant guitarist. He also happens to be my cousin, but he's still a brilliant guitarist, and I'm going to have him on, I believe, October 6th, that show. Mr. G's here is going to be monkeying around that night.
Going to see the Monkees farewell tour. hey, we're the Monkees.
Hey, there's still 2 of them left, so it's officially
the
Monkees. And so I'll be manning the show by myself that night, so I'm going to have him come in, and he's going to talk a little bit about his life. He had an interesting life of touring for about 20 years, touring crisscrossing the country with various rock bands. And they opened for many of the biggest names in the music business. And, you know, they came close to being signed themselves with a record deal, and it all kind of fell through. And one of his books he's working on is tentatively titled Almost Made It or something like that. And it's just interesting stories. So October 6th.
In the coming weeks, we have a bunch of books coming out. We have the 3rd book in the Chair series by Robert McKenzie. We have There Must Be Something in the Water, the book about Green Pond, North Carolina, and all of the people who came out of there and made good. We're getting ready to release Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy. And Patricia Guthrie's Legacy of Danger novel is going to be issued.
Yeah, we have more than 15 more books in the process of and various stages of being published. So we'll fill you in on those as they go along.
Next week, our guest is creative artist Marlena Smith.
And after that, soon after that, is Jay Ash Looney. He's an author here with Fresh Ink Group. He's got several books on the site, so go check that out, Jay Ash Looney.
All right. Thanks again, Patty. We'll see everybody next time.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Patty. Bye, everybody. Tune in next week.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word. Support our guests. then find us at FreshInkGroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.